Like, if we want to recognize the dream, we have to first realize that we are in the nightmare. We have to realize that as we begin to wake up, getting some semblances of justice doesn't mean that we have justice.
Welcome to Dear Culture, the podcast that gives you news you can trust for the culture. I'm Natasha S. Alford, Vice President of Digital Content at The Griot.
And I'm Todd Johnson, Chief Content Officer at The Griot. And this week we're asking, Dear Culture, what's different this time? Please be advised that we will be discussing sensitive topics such as racialized violence and death. Protect your peace as needed.
It's Monday, May 25th, south of downtown Minneapolis. Police are responding to a call at a local grocery store about a man who allegedly tried to buy a box of menthol cigarettes with a counterfeit $20 bill.
911, where's your emergency?
17 minutes later, that man is lying motionless on the ground with one of the responding officer's knees pressed on his neck. He is later pronounced dead at a local hospital.
The man, of course, is 46-year-old George Floyd, and his death has inspired intense demonstrations across the world, starting in Minneapolis with demonstrations in Los Angeles, Philadelphia, New York, and Paris still raging on.
We cannot turn a blind eye. It is on us as leaders to see this for what it is and call it what it is.
At this point, the demonstrations have been happening for more than a week. And in the U.S., they've been characterized by violent clashes between police and demonstrators. Many journalists have been targeted by police as well. But the added pressure from these protests may have worked. Keith Ellison, Minnesota's attorney general, is now overseeing the case. The four officers involved have been fired. Last week, Derek Chauvin, the officer seen with his knee on Mr. Floyd's neck, was arrested and charged with third-degree murder and second-degree manslaughter with culpable negligence. Just yesterday, an additional charge of second-degree murder was added on. And finally, after so much intense protest, the three other officers on the scene have now been charged with aiding and abetting murder. But this isn't just about George Floyd and this one case. Protests across the country are still happening, with demonstrators citing the system of policing as their concern. And let's not forget that this is all happening in the midst of a global pandemic. I think it's obvious we're in a really crucial moment right now.
So on Dear Culture today, we're going to try and unpack it all. What, if anything, feels different about these demonstrations as opposed to similar protests in the past? And what is exactly next for the movement? First, though, we should check in. Natasha, I know this week has been really intense. How are you holding up?
You know, to be honest, Todd, I am exhausted. It's not just exhaustion as a journalist covering these stories, but just exhaustion as a Black person. You know, how many times have we seen these cycles happen where an unarmed Black person is killed by police or by some vigilante? You know, we have media uproar, there's protests, and then even in the case where an officer is charged, we don't get justice. And so I think that there's a fear of this pattern just repeating. But at the same time, something about this feels different. You know, we've covered a lot of these stories on The Griot. And I have to say, the coalition of people who are out protesting, it just feels like more people are engaged. You know, it's intergenerational, it's interracial. People are just really fed up. And it feels like this is one of those rare moments where more people are agreeing than disagreeing that it's time to do something. I don't know. What do you think? How are you feeling?
I am just trying to process on kind of a day by day basis everything that's going on, you know, trying to keep things in perspective. You want to make sure your family is safe, not just physically, but, you know, my wife and our conversations, my young son, and that everybody is just trying to keep everything together. And, you know, professionally, it has been very intense for all of us at The Griot. And just looking at what's happening and how it's unfolding, I think from a business perspective and a corporation perspective, seeing these companies try to weigh in and kind of enter the fray with statements and saying things that their company likely has never said before in this sort of forum, talking about racism, talking about privilege. I think that's just one thing that's just really different. And, you know, in the grand scheme, you know, maybe it's not as important, but I don't think that's something we saw in previous demonstrations to this degree. And to a certain extent, the coalition that you talked about, Natasha, I think you're right. I think we're seeing more people engaging, not necessarily all engaging in the right way, whatever that means, but more people, at least with the desire to do something about what's going on with what happened to George Floyd and also the systemic issues and discrimination that Black people and folks of color face to this day. So I think those two things, in addition to what you said, really rang true this time around.
Yeah, and I think we got hit with a 1-2 punch, right? So the griots' week started off pretty hectic when we found this story about Amy Cooper calling the police on a man who was watching birds in Central Park and claiming that he was threatening her life and that she was specifically going to weaponize race and say that it was an African-American man threatening her. And so, you know, that was the big story of the week. It was outrageous, obviously, hearkening back to the time of Emmett Till, you know, and the trauma that the Black community went through, seeing that young boy murdered brutally the way that he was over a lie that a white woman told. And here we are in 2020, you know, seeing that pattern repeat again, just a lie. And the sort of imagination and projection of African-American men being a threat, being dangerous when they're not. Right. And so we thought that was going to be the story. And then on top of that, the homicide of George Floyd.
You're right, because the even going back to the Amy Cooper situation, I think, you know, Ta-Nehisi Coates talks about this, that there are white people in this country that believe that everything in America belongs to them. You know, that's just the frame of reference that they have. And so Amy Cooper is a representation of that. They're in a public place as prominent as Central Park, wanting to just let Christian Cooper, this Black man, know that this is her space, this is her park, and he doesn't have a right to engage with her about breaking the rules and just sort of like asserting her power over him in that physical space that he didn't have a right to even open up his mouth. And then leading into George Floyd, it's from a police and an institution perspective, it's the same. It's sort of along the same lines, exerting your presence and your power over a community and a group of people that were surrounding this officer, telling him to stop, telling him in effect that he was breaking the rules by completely abusing his power and literally killing this man. But that wasn't enough, because that officer specifically, Derek Chauvin, was like, no. You know, I'm the cop here. I'm the officer. This is my domain, and there's nothing you can do about it. And we saw that play out on video.
Yes. And when you say that, it reminds me of a tweet I saw from CNN reporter Abby Phillip, who was saying that there was something about people telling the officer that he was doing something wrong that almost made him dig in further. You know, it was as if the more criticism he got, the more he decided to stand his ground. And obviously, you know, he caused a loss of life there. I guess the last thing I'll say about this is just this moment right now is opening up old wounds, and it's also creating intergenerational conversation. You know, talking with my father, he told me stories that I hadn't really heard of before, you know, being 14 years old and having police in Syracuse, New York hit him and beat him up and call him the N-word because they thought he was with a group of young Black men who'd robbed a white woman. And they were explicit about saying that a white woman had been robbed. And so, you know, that was not long ago. There are people alive with those stories. And here we are in 2020, and those stories are still happening.
Exactly right. And the point you made about the folks gathered around George Floyd telling that officer to stop, that sort of interaction emboldening that officer to sort of double down on what he was doing, we see that play out all the time. I mean, look at Sandra Bland. If you look at that body cam, the dashboard video of their interaction, she wasn't asked to get out of the car until she responded to him and said, look, I'm not putting out my cigarette. And that set him off, that she was, again, speaking up for herself And that's when he said, you know what, I'm fed up, get out of the car. And that's when, you know, things just went south. We see that play out over and over and over again. And it's just, it just needs to stop. It needs to stop. There is a lot to dig into here, and I could not think of a better guest to help us do all of that and more than the one we have with us today. Dr. Yousef Salaam was one of the five young men wrongfully convicted in the 1989 Central Park jogger case. He served more than 6 years in juvenile detention and didn't have his charges vacated until years after his release. His story and the story of the rest of the exonerated five was told in Netflix's critically acclaimed miniseries When They See Us, which was directed by Ava DuVernay. Today, Dr. Salaam works as a motivator, speaker, and leader in social justice, and he's sitting down with us today. Welcome to Dear Culture.
It is my absolute pleasure to be with you all and to share in this time of pain, of, I want to say, progress, because this is us moving up the mountain. This is us making sure that we are heard and counted.
You talk about this moment right now, and we would be remiss if we did not acknowledge that this past week, we saw protests not only across the United States, but around the world against police brutality in honor of George Floyd. Now, George Floyd is just one of many Black lives who we've lost to police brutality. And Dr. Salaam, I just want to know, what was your reaction to the protests as they started to take off? And we saw that they weren't going away, but were going strong.
You know, what was amazing for me as I saw these protests begin to catch fire is that this is the voice of the voiceless. You know, here we are, we've been in pain. We've been socialized to disconnect from the history of who, what, where, why, and how we are. And we've been given in replace of that reality something that's totally against, diametrically opposed to the true freedom, justice, and equality of us as a people. And as I saw what was going on, not just in this country, but I started getting reports from around the world. And I got to tell you, I'm so heartfelt in thanking and appreciating folks from around the globe valuing what's going on here in these United States, right? This place where they say we the people, and we have not been a part of those people. This place where they say that we are supposed to be a full citizen, but yet we have been pushed to the side and pushed to the back and been given second-class citizenship. We've been overwhelmingly run over by the spike wheels of justice, if you will, when it comes to the reality of the criminal justice system, to which I call the criminal system of injustice. It is a very proud moment, I would say, to be on the cusp of change, because this tectonic shift that we're experiencing on the global proportions is for us to say enough is enough. We will never, ever, ever allow you to take away our God-given freedom towards true freedom, justice, and equality.
And Dr. Salaam, what was your initial gut reaction to the news that George Floyd had died?
You know, when I first saw that, of course, it was on the heels of the other atrocities that were going on. And the worst part was that we had just heard about some of the other stuff. So the Ahmaud Arbery case we heard about, and we thought it was like, you know, we were disgusted because we found out that this was something that happened in February and we were just learning about it. And then right on the heels of that, you got George Floyd. Right on the heels of that, you got all of the other things that continuously go on. It is a deafening, like we're yelling to the world that we need help. We're yelling to God to save us, because the oppressor's foot has constantly been on our neck. It has never been okay in this country after Colin Kaepernick kneeled for people in those spaces to say, you know what, I'm gonna kneel in peaceful protest to bring awareness to what's going on. But yet they can kneel on our necks and be given all of the questions in the world. Well, let's wait and see. And there may be mitigating circumstances. We don't know really what the truth is, but when it comes to them going after people who look like you and me, we are guilty and we have to prove ourselves innocent. And in the case of George Floyd, what I was seeing was that they were holding court in the streets. That was a public lynching amidst all of the other public lynchings that have been going on. It used to be a public lynching, and then they went to legal lynching, and now it's back to the public lynching. You know, Will Smith said that racism isn't getting better, it's getting videotaped. And I think in a way it's getting worse because it's getting videotaped, because it's becoming normalized. Far too often have we turned the news on and said to ourselves, oh, wow, this is something that they're posting about something that happened like a while back. No, they're posting about something that happened while you were sleeping and you woke up to the American nightmare.
As you're talking, I'm thinking about this question that keeps coming up, which is what makes this time different, right? Because you've been in this fight for a long time. A lot of people have been in this fight for a long time. But is there something different about the energy, about the movement that we're seeing right now? Do we think that this is going to stick in a different way? Because we also saw this interracial, intergenerational coalition of people who were out on the front line. Some people saying that they didn't think it was a problem before, but now all of a sudden they see. What do you think could be different, if that is the case?
You know, we are now in the space of knowledge. We are in a space of 2020. 2020 in many ways represents vision, right? But not just vision, clear vision, correct vision, perfect vision. What happens next year? 2021. But imagine the visualization of what you're seeing. 2021. Perfect vision last year, moving to the right tomorrow, right? There was a song back in the days that said, don't push me because I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head, right? Knowledge. We're in that space of knowledge. We're in that space where all of the things are now being culminated at this very moment and at this very time for us to realize that as we are dying because of COVID-19, because as we are in this crisis, we continue to realize, and the world is realizing, that the crisis over and above that is racism, is white supremacy, white male dominance. It's that only law, not only in America, that is realized and recognized, but in the world. Because on global proportions, this is why, like, even films that I am a part of, the story that was told about us, members of the Exonerated Five, when they see us. Yesterday was our 1-year anniversary for that film being given to the world. It wasn't just about the play on title of when they see us, meaning the five, but it was a reality of when they see us as a people, and how we need these mediums, we need these tools, we need these moments that's going to shift us and that's going to shape us and that's going to help us to understand that as we move into the future, like, if we want to recognize the dream, we have to first realize that we are in the nightmare. We have to realize that as we begin to wake up, getting some semblances of justice doesn't mean that we have justice. What the system is failing to understand, failing to recognize, failing to hear, is that the reason why people are out in the streets is because when it comes to Black and Brown, you rush to judge, you sign, seal, and deliver the fact that you want us to be guilty until proven innocent. Right now, we're saying enough is enough. Right now, I think the young people especially are vibrating with the spirit of our ancestors. They're rising up. And I love the fact that we are getting proper reporting of the news. On the one hand, you have people saying people are they're violently protesting, they're burning things down, they're doing this, they're doing that. And on the other hand, you have that Michael Jackson moment I'll never forget, when somebody said, this is the videotape. And Michael Jackson said, hold on for one second. He called his team and said, show them our videotape of the whole interview, right? And you see that the young people are going right after people are setting fire, or they're seeing bins on fire, and they're going in there snuffing out the oxygen so that that fire is put out. They are a part of the solution. They are always a part of the solution. And I think that we have to recognize that. I think it behooves the system to understand that it's not enough to say we'll wait and see. It's enough to say we're going to prosecute. We're talking about people who are citizens. And more and above that, we're talking about a government who folks who have been raising their hands in swearing to protect and serve who? Us, are not doing that. And so as a common citizen, you violate the law, you have to be held to the same standard of what the law is. We see you murder someone, you have to be arrested. You have to be charged. There should not be a wait and see. Because when they wait and see, this is just as delayed, which means what? Justice denied.
Dr. Salama, from your perspective and your experience and all of the work that you're doing now, what's the one thing, one part of criminal justice reform you think should be sort of pursued and tackled right away after these protests and demonstrations slow down a bit?
We, as we began to wake up, we said, man, the system is broken. It needs to be fixed. We've realized, rather, I should say, that the system is not broken. The system is actually working as it was designed. The system is alive and sick. What we need is a total replacement of all things evil in the system and replace with all things good. There used to be a time where if a person committed a crime, and even before that, you have to even go back and say to yourself, what are the precursors to crime? Like, what causes that? To truly understand why the system should work. The system is supposed to work because if you commit a crime, it used to be that you go to the correctional facilities. You go to a place to pay your debt back to society, and then you're able to be returned to society and participate because you paid your debt. We live in a very punitive reality today. We live in a reality where when we look at the Constitution of the United States and we realize that they have an amendment called the 13th Amendment, we start saying, hold on, is this a joke? You mean right here in the founding documents of this country, you have coded in your own language that slavery is abolished except for the punishment of a crime? And those people who were slaves or enslaved were people who were robbed of their country, ripped from the mother of their country, and placed over here, working from can't see sun up to can't see sundown to build this country, then being told that you're going to be given 40 acres and a mule. I live in Georgia right now. 40 acres is a huge amount of land. We've been denied that. And so tomorrow, if in a perfect system, tomorrow, what that would look like is that all people who overstep the bounds of the law, whether they are those who are there to protect and serve. If they overstep the bounds of the law, they are prosecuted to the full extent of the law. Those prosecutions can't be from people who look like them, who are them. I mean, if me and my homies investigate each other, we may say, well, shoot, I know my man. I know he okay, so we're going to overlook that. But if you've been beating your spouse, then you need to fix that. If you've been poisoning people, you need to fix that. We found out through capitalism, we started seeing all these videos on social media, and through capitalism, they'll find things like people putting food color in water and then plunging strawberries down in the water to make the strawberries look redder, to make the green beans look greener. And we know it's technology. As we go out and we shop for ourselves, we look for the best that we can for ourselves, and we're being tricked. And if you don't have money and you say, well, I'm going to buy me some chicken to feed my family, and you go into the grocery stores in your neighborhood and you find the biggest chicken that's overwhelmingly inexpensive. And years later, you see that they injected chickens and made them look fatter and plumper. What have we been eating? What system are we under? We're under a demonic system right now. We need to put God back in to the system.
Dr. Salam, you were talking about prosecution, and it makes me think of what just happened in Central Park. This woman, Amy Cooper, who we all watched on camera weaponize race, white supremacy, and, you know, call the police on a Black man saying that he threatened her life, that has to hit on an emotional level for you.
My God, I want to tell you that if I was to sum up in a statement, a friend of mine said this the other day, and I didn't necessarily get his permission to say this, but I've been saying it over and over again. And what he said, which is what I've been echoing, is when they cry, we die. I want people to think about that. What happened with Emmett Till? Just yesterday, the accuser said, I'm sorry, I made that whole story up. I need to apologize. That young man should not have been murdered. First of all, it wasn't even a crime. But imagine that. For the accusation, he was drugged from the home that he was in, beaten to death, shot in the head, and a cotton gin tied around his neck. I mean, think about that. Think about the fact that when the Central Park jogger case happened, we immediately became the modern day Scottsboro Boys. I had no idea who the Scottsboro Boys were. Never heard of them before. My education in America with the criminal justice system was instantaneous. And it was very triggering to see a white woman in Central Park. We're watching, and she's on video. We see it with our own eyes. She's on video making a false accusation. We hear the man saying, please don't come next to me. Please don't touch me. You know, and she's saying, I'm going to call the cops and I'm going to tell them this and that and this and that. I applaud her employer for letting her go. That's what should happen. Because when you weaponize race, in our case, after Donald Trump placed those full-page ads in New York City 2 weeks after we were accused, a few days later, Pat Buchanan writes in the paper, you know what we should do? We should take the eldest one, who is Corey Wise, by the way. We should take the eldest one. He wrote this in the papers in the New York Post. We should take the eldest one and hang him from a tree in Central Park. We should take the others and horsewhip them. This is what he wrote. And he said, we should do this by June 1st. This is America. This is as American as apple pie, what we're experiencing. And we've been showing the world, we've been crying out to the world since we've been here. And I think right now, change is coming.
You mentioned Donald Trump, who certainly at the time that he put those ads out condemning you all and calling for the death penalty, no one could have imagined that he would be the president of the United States, however, 20, 30 years later. But even today, in a call with governors, President Trump was talking about that the governors were weak on the protests and that they need to use more force. I think the quote was, they need to dominate the protests. We talk a lot about at the GRIO how important it is, obviously, to not just focus on the presidential elections and how to work from the ground up, your local elections, your state elections, et cetera. But it's undeniable that the president certainly sets a tone for the mood of the nation and how police departments and states react to things such as what's going on now. I guess, what are your thoughts on President Trump and how he's handling what is clearly a historical moment that seems to be completely getting away from him?
He's always represented evil to us. The fact that he's in the White House is a slap in the face of all people who are here, because we shouldn't be subjected to what we've been experiencing. And I'm not even talking about my personal experience. I'm talking about the collective experience that we've experienced here in this country under his lack of leadership. For him to say, these are all code words, you need to dominate. What are we talking about? White supremacy. I said white male dominance. We are in America. We are of America. We've forgotten, if those of us who've read The Spook Who Sat by the Door, we have forgotten that we had to keep our eyes on the prize. The America that we experience today is existing because we've allowed it to exist.
Well, Dr. Salaam, this has been an incredible discussion. We could just sit here and listen to you talk all day. There's one last question I have to ask, and that's about accountability. Do you think that Amy Cooper should be prosecuted for lying on Christian Cooper? And, you know, we know that there's a law that's been proposed that would make it a crime to report, you know, a false complaint in that way. But do you think there should be additional accountability here?
Absolutely. I think what she did was illegal. I'm talking about, like, from the human perspective. And so, yes, she should be made an example of. Yes, she should be prosecuted. Because never again should that be allowed. No one should ever feel comfortable and say to themselves, I'm going to say that I'm a white woman in distress. and they'll come and they'll arrest and maybe kill this person because I don't like them, because they look like the other. The whole idea of xenophobia, what that means, all of it, this is what we're fighting against. But I don't want folks to forget that we can win.
Thank you so much, Dr. Salam. That was very insightful and a powerful conversation. We want to thank you again for joining us here on Dear Culture, which is the GRIO's flagship podcast for important issues and conversations such as this. So thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure. And thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Wow, Todd, that was an incredible conversation. I mean, he knows better than anybody about injustice and just the fact that you have that Central Park tie-in. It's almost eerie, you know, it's an eerie reminder of how far we haven't come in this country.
And to experience something so long ago and in 2020, the conversation seems to be the same. It is jarring. It's a chance, as he talked about, to really, you know, reflect and continue to fight. But there has to be a part of him. Shoot, there's a part of me that's just incredibly sad that things have not changed the way they should be and have not become what they should be.
Absolutely. In this week's Moment of Clarity, we're talking about President Trump's response to the protests around the country.
Natasha, what has President Trump's response been?
Unsurprisingly, he's taken a very hard line. On a call with several governors this week, he told them they need to dominate, which many took issue with. Obviously, that's a very loaded word that he used. Last week, he also tweeted calling the protesters thugs, and he used the phrase, "When the looting starts, the shooting starts," which many took as a threat. Understandably so. It harkens back to a phrase used in 1967 by Miami Police Chief Walter Headley, another man known for being racist against Black people. Trump has also made it clear that he's willing to use military force to quell the protests. Here's a clip of him from a press conference this Monday.
America needs creation, not destruction. Cooperation, not contempt. Security, not anarchy. Healing, not hatred. Justice, not chaos. This is our mission. And we will succeed 100%. We will succeed. Our country always wins. That is why I am taking immediate presidential action to stop the violence and restore security and safety in America. I am mobilizing all available federal resources, civilian and military, to stop the rioting and looting, to end the destruction and arson, and to protect the rights of law-abiding Americans, including your Second Amendment rights.
Wow. That clip is incredibly hard to take in and hear from anyone, let alone the President of the United States. I don't know what to say. For him to literally violently clear out protesters in Lafayette Square so he could walk from the podium in the Rose Garden over to that church for a photo opportunity with him holding a Bible. I've said this a few times during these last 3.5-4 years, but it just felt like there was a little bit of a shift in the rhetoric and the actions. And it's like, okay, this is one of those moments where it's like back in 2015 during the campaign, this is what Black folks especially would say happened. And then Monday afternoon, that walk to the church was a very clear example of that.
You know, I think what's so interesting about President Trump is how he defines patriotism, right? So it's okay to show up at the State House bearing arms, you know, rifles and these guns and weapons if you are part of MAGA, right? If you're someone who aligns with him politically. And yet protesters who are fighting against racial injustice, you know, are being told to get out of the way, to sit down, that they are somehow a part of destruction and not actually exercising their constitutional rights. So obviously he picks and chooses based on, you know, whatever political stance he takes. But the absence of leadership, the way that we sat and we watched those protests play out and he let the White House sit in darkness, I think it says everything about him. I think he's actually a really cowardly president. He's not the leader that he projects or wants himself to be. And so in moments like this, as you said, Todd, these are photo ops. You know, these are things that he has to craft and create because he doesn't actually have the heart or the mind of a true leader to get us through this difficult moment.
Well, we will continue to report on this administration, this president, and all of the protests and activities that are going on across the nation. Natasha, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I want to remind our listeners to support and show love to your local Black businesses, especially during a time when many have been forced to rebuild or have seen their business impacted because of COVID-19. The business that we will highlight this week is Black and Mobile. Black and Mobile is the nation's first ever Black-owned delivery service that hooks you up with your city's best Black-owned restaurants. Delivering the culture straight to your front door, Black and Mobile services Philadelphia, Atlanta, and Detroit, and is still up and working during COVID-19. The Griot has published a list of more than 50 Black businesses to support during the coronavirus pandemic. If you'd like your business to be featured, email us at podcasts@thegriot.com. That's GRIO.com.
Yes, definitely support Black businesses right now. Thanks, everybody, for listening to Dear Culture. We hope that you liked what you heard. Go out and give us a 5-star review wherever you listen to your podcast, and make sure you share it with everyone you know.
And remember to please email all questions, suggestions, and compliments to podcasts@thegriot.com. The Dear Culture podcast is brought to you by The Griot and executive produced by Natasha S. Alford, Rob Dozier, and Kevin Y. Brown.